Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the republicbroadcasting.org. It's the take two of free speech, because sometimes you start something and it doesn't work right, and you got to start it all over again. But that's what we're doing. And so, and you can help us by going to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed funding to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664, or phone it into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators are standing by. So is Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. How are you doing? I hope you've had a good weekend. And we've seen some massive developments on the world stage, obviously, in the last few days. And it seems like we could be hurtling towards World War III.
Yes, yes. There's some friendly people over in Israel who I guess they want to bring on like the new era, whatever it is, whatever they're trying to bring on. But they seem to be in a bit of a hurry for it.
Well, the interesting thing here is this was actually all started. You wouldn't believe this, what I'm about to say, if you read the mainstream news. But this was obviously all started by Israel. Israel were the ones who kicked this off. Israel were the ones that launched, the first strike. They carried out an illegal activity, an act of war, where they bombed the Iranian consulate in Damascus. And ever since then, they have been playing the victim, which seems bizarre, really, when you say that. Ever since then, they've been playing the victim. I mean, we know they love to play the victim. But it is amazing, isn't it, that they do something like this, and from that, they somehow manage to convince people that they're the victims when Iran retaliates. And that's really the sort of jumping off point for this conversation, isn't it? That, you know, Iran have, been the ones that have been attacked. They are the ones that, were the innocent party in this. But now they have retaliated. They are the de facto bad guys. And no one's calling on Israel to act in a restrained way. No one's really calling for restraint. If anything, you've got the mainstream media are actively calling for blood at this point, aren't they? They're sort of saying, well, when it comes down to it, you know, Israel have the right to do what they please. And the fact that Israel are the aggressors here has already been completely airbrushed out of the mainstream narrative, which sounds insane, because we live in such a connected world. It only takes a Google search to see this. I've noticed this in the comments on sort of mainstream. So Twitter and YouTube used to be the place where people came to create content, where smaller content creators would get big, and that would be the sort of counterbalance to the mainstream media. However, as time's gone by, things have changed. So now, I think it would be fair to say that YouTube is completely at this point co-opted by the mainstream media, and YouTube isn't a place where small content creators come to create content anymore. It's a place where the promoted clips are Sky News or talk radio or mainstream platforms. The BBC have a channel there. And the interesting thing is, if you actually were to look at the response from the mainstream media are obviously completely on the side of Israel. They're absolutely supporting, Israel's quote unquote right to blow Iran back into the Stone Age. But the interesting thing is, almost every comment underneath these pieces are people saying, but Israel started this. Why is no one condemning the attacks on the Iranian consulate? And this is really funny, because you can see quite clearly in this case that there is this massive, massive disconnect between the public and the media. And this has never been clearer. So the public are saying, hey, Israel started this. But then in every actual broadcast, the broadcasters, the mainstream media, etc., they're all talking as if it's all a ransom. This was an in fact, I've seen people calling this an unprovoked attack, which is absolutely hilarious. But looking at this, there's sort of several takeaways from this, but and we can go through them all, but I think one of the most important takeaways, and let's start with a positive one, that for the first time ever, you actually have normal people saying that they're completely sick of the mainstream media and not buying a word of this. So normal people now are saying, you know, enough's enough. We're not buying any of this trash. You know, Israel are the aggressors. Israel have done wrong here. This isn't a case of this innocent little Middle Eastern nation being picked on by everyone else. They've gone round. They've caused this problem. And more to the point, why won't anyone in the West admit this? Why is everyone lying to us? And I think that's incredible, isn't it? And it's almost now we're at the emperor's new. This is an emperor's new clothes moment, isn't it? So, you know, the emperor's strutting down the street, you know, completely naked, and everyone can see he's naked, but he continues to do this. He continues to do this. And everybody in the crowd is that little boy who says, why are you naked? Why are you naked?
And yeah, continues why are you naked? And why are you molesting all those children?
but this continues on. And this is the interesting thing. This is sort of continuing on, isn't it? You know, this is continuing. And even though everyone in the comments sections are saying, well, look, this doesn't really work for us. You know, this is obvious what you're doing. You know, Israel is the aggressor. You know, we've had enough of this rubbish. We don't want to see any more of it. We are done fundamentally with, you know, this Israeli aggression. We're not buying it anymore. None of us are buying it anymore. You know, that is it. You know, we're done. But despite that being the sort of takeaway from this, for most people anyway, we are actually seeing a situation where the mainstream media pundits are still talking this rubbish. So the mainstream media pundits, despite being quite clearly shown up in numerous ways by all the people in the comment section, because remember, mainstream media at one point was more or less completely unaccountable. When the BBC just broadcast what the BBC had to broadcast, they were an unaccountable entity, because you could sit at home shouting at the TV like a madman, but it wouldn't do you any good, really, would it? But now,
I do it anyway.
But now you can shout back, can't you? That's the thing. Now you can shout back. You can be in the comments underneath the videos and say, hey, this is wrong. You're lying to us here. This isn't truthful. You're not telling us the truth. And I think that is a fundamental sort of sea change in the way the media works. And you know, it's almost like being in a live arena, isn't it? So I don't know whether you have something called pantomime in America. We have something here called pantomime, which is sort of like a child's theatrical performance. And when you go to these pantomimes, there's usually an evil villain and a good guy, and it's played for laughs and it's played for audience interaction. So you have the good guy and he'll be stood in the middle of the stage, and the bad guy will be creeping up on him, and the children will all be shouting, he's behind you, he's behind you. And then the good guy exaggeratedly turns around, and by this time the bad guy's hidden, and all the children laugh, and he swings around, there's nobody behind me. And this plays out numerous times, much to the amusement of the audience, because the audience are children. And that's how pantomime works. And previously, media wasn't like that, was it? Media wasn't like that. You didn't have a live audience. So if a newsreader or a newscaster or presenter was telling blatant lies, there couldn't be anybody to call that person out. So they could get away with such lies. And they did for many years. These people did get away with blatant lies. However, now I would say we're moving into this bold new era, if you will. And this bold new era is an era whereby you can't get away with blatant lies anymore. You can't come out and be like, oh, well, these are cast iron facts, because underneath there is a live audience. There's a record of what people think, this audience interaction. And this audience interaction is hilarious, because you've got these newscasters talking about this unprovoked attack and Israel's right to retaliate. But then you've got thousands of comments beneath with tens of thousands of likes, you know, thumbing them up, all saying, but Israel attacked first. And at this point, you're seeing this, you know, sort of pantomime like audience interaction, and the media have become this pantomime villain, who are all en masse reading from this script, and the audience is screaming back, that's not true, you're lying. But they carry on speaking these lies, they carry on propagating this Israeli Zio propaganda. but nobody's buying it anymore. So that's my first take from this. I mean, obviously, there are geopolitical takeaways from this. There's going to be a huge geopolitical fallout. But the first thing that I've actually taken away from this is the fact that for the first time ever, the vast majority of people don't seem to actually be buying this garbage. They don't seem to be buying in to this rubbish. They seem to be going the opposite way. They seem to actually be saying, well, you know, no, this isn't how it is. You're not telling us the truth. And I think that's a good thing, because in the past, that would never really happen, let alone in cases where, you know, Israel was the, you know, part of the equation. So what do you think to this, Patrick? Obviously, you're a great analyst and you've got plenty of thoughts, but I thought I'd kick it off, because often we talk about negatives, but I thought I'd actually kick this off with something positive. The fact that, you know, the mainstream narrative around this has absolutely collapsed already.
I think there really has been a sea change, and everybody, you know, in the Democratic Party, the one thing is, what's interesting is the Biden administration itself actually seems to be kind of walking back. You know, when all this the crisis started in October, last October, when the crisis started, Biden went, he flew over to Israel and he made all these, basically wrote a blank check. And now it seems like he's got a bit of buyer's remorse, if not Biden himself, people in his administration. And the Iranians are saying that they actually notified, they gave Washington like 3 days notice before they sent these drones and ballistic missiles and cruise missiles into Israel. And, you know, there is some precedent for this. When Trump assassinated Soleimani, the Iranians, they responded by striking American bases in Syria, which are there illegally anyway. But they did it in such a way that it didn't kill Americans. And it was, you know, so it was kind of, it's not exactly theater, but it was designed not to escalate. And the thing is, the Israelis, they did this massive provocation, this act of war, to attack the Iranian embassy in Damascus. And they did this as a provocation because they want an escalation. The Iranians have to retaliate, but they don't want an escalation. I don't think they want an escalation because world opinion is just turning against Israel. It's clearly turning against Israel. And also, the adults in the room really don't want a World War III. We are on the brink of World War III, like, as you said at the beginning of the show. But the adults in the room really don't want it. And when you get down to it, even the Biden thing doesn't want it. And so there are reports that Biden has told Netanyahu that the United States is not going to participate in any kind of retaliation against Iran. So Israel is becoming increasingly isolated. And then within the United States, a big hunk of the base of the Democratic Party, which is young, which is non-white, which frankly is largely anti-white, they may see this as a case of Israel doing white supremacy at the brown Palestinians, which isn't really what's going on. But at any rate, they oppose this, and Biden does apparently want to get reelected. So he's on the one hand, he's been a self-proclaimed Zionist. You don't have to be Jewish to be Zionist. That's been his motto for his entire political career. But on the other hand, he's stuck in this situation where the people that voted for him last time are really angry about this. And so he's walking it back. Whereas Trump, who pretty studiously avoided talking directly about the situation. In fact, was at the beginning of March, I guess, the New York Times had written an editorial saying Trump's not saying anything. In fact, you know, Trump was saying that the Hezbollah was run by smart people, and that Netanyahu had let his people down, and he was coming under fire from the New York Times for that. But recently, Trump has made some statements, and in particular, since the Iranian response, Iranian retaliation, his catchphrase is, this never would have happened if I was president. But of course, then he riffed on that some and started saying things like, he said any Jew would have to be crazy to vote for Biden, and that he stands with Israel, and all that Trump himself is, you know, Israel's greatest friend. And what I've been noticing, I don't know if it's connected, but over the past few weeks, Trump's poll numbers, Trump had a pretty healthy lead, and he's never really led in the polls. He had a pretty healthy lead over Biden, and in at least in the one-on-one matchups where they have Trump against Biden, the one-on-one matchups, Trump is and Biden are now neck and neck. So Trump's been falling. I don't know if it's because of this or not, but Trump, frankly, he's just being a bitch. And whereas the main part of Trump's base is old boomers who watch Fox News, and they've been brainwashed, and they are pro-Israel. But the thing is, some of the people who are influential with Trump's base, like Candace Owens, like Tucker Carlson, in particular, the two of them are so Candace Owens, I think we talked about her a week or two ago, so our audience is familiar with her feud with these pro-Israel Jews. But Tucker Carlson had he had an interview with some Palestinian Christian minister, like a 40-minute interview, and it's got, what, does it have 15 million views already? And during that, Tucker made a statement that's been widely retweeted and everything, saying that if you're a Christian and you wake up in the morning and think that having a foreign country bomb churches and murder Christians is somehow part of your faith, then you've missed the thread, something like that. And so I think even in Trump's base, it's just so blatant what the Israelis are doing, so awful. And I do think we're starting to see kind of a sea change. So I've been talking for a while. I'll kick it back to you. What do you think?
Well, I think the Trump thing might be about something different, actually, or Trump's people's disillusionment with Trump might be actually about something different. You know, I don't want to counter signal you too much, but Trump,
like I said, I'm not sure if it's connected, but it's happening at the same time.
Well, I was going to say it's happening at the same time, but I was reading something about Trump recently that he made certain comments about abortion that hadn't pleased his core base. So that was something that I had read. So he'd made comments that he certainly wouldn't want to make abortion illegal on a federal level. And, you know, he wasn't going to push back any further, you know, other than what's happened with the Roe versus Wade. He wasn't willing to go any further on that.
I'm just going to interject. Unfortunately, Americans seem to care more about that than about World War III.
Well, no. Well, that's what I mean. And that was apparently something which I saw a few commentators saying, well, this is going to be, out of everything that Trump's done, this is going to be the one thing that hurts the guy the most. You know, this is going to be the one thing that really wounds him, because he's got a lot of, you know, he had a lot of evangelical sort of support, and that evangelical support kind of largely hinges upon, you know, him being sort of slavish in his opposition to abortion. So that was an interesting point, but that's beside what we're saying now. However, I will say this: the Tucker Carlson thing was massive. So for Tucker to stop supporting Israel and start speaking out against Israel is massive.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody goody. So you met
Okay. Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar, has tanked. It's worth nothing. And the gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
However, I will say this. The Tucker Carlson thing was massive. So for Tucker to stop supporting Israel and start speaking out against Israel is massive. And it's massive because Tucker is one of those guys that actually has this huge amount of influence over kind of what you would say like boomer type people. You know, he's somebody who absolutely does have a huge amount of influence. And you can't get away from that. And I think that Trump sometimes fails to read the room. You know, I'm certainly not saying Trump's an idiot, but I think Trump sometimes fails to read the room with how far his own support base have gone over the last few years. And a great example of this was with COVID. So I remember Trump, I think it was actually with Candace Owens of all people, where Trump actually, you know, came out and was like, hey, you know, but I was the guy that got the vaccine to everyone. And Candace Owens was like, well, I haven't taken your stupid vaccine. And he was like, what? Why wouldn't you take the vaccine? The vaccine's like my crowning glory. You know, I was the guy that pushed this out. If it wasn't for me, people wouldn't have had their lovely COVID vaccines. And she's like, yeah, no one's taking them. Your support base aren't taken. This is something that your support base is at odds with you with, in fact. You know, we don't want your vaccine. You know, we don't want any vaccine. In fact, we're vax skeptics. And I think that That was one of these things where Candace Owens shocked Trump, and Trump just didn't really know what to make of it, because from his perspective, he'd been somewhat of a hero. He'd been the guy that had got things done. You know, he was getting, you know, getting America, you know, sorted out, you know, with his jabs and whatnot. But fundamentally, that's not where his support base is anymore. And I think Trump doesn't sort of understand that his support base, maybe in 2016, has moved on. So a lot of people who came to Trump as like, well, I'm not totally in favor of immigration, but I am fundamentally a multiracialist. Fundamentally, a multiracialist is different to multiculturalists, by the way. That's an important point. These people weren't multiculturalists, but they were multiracialists. And, you know, they came to Trump, and they were very much, you know, sort of, how can I say it? Like, you know, they were multiracialists. They weren't multiculturalists. You know, the two things are different. So they believed that, you know, blacks could be Americans, but they had to adopt American values. You know, they weren't people who would have been ethno-nationalists in any way. They supported the state of Israel. They were anti-abortion. They had what you would call traditional 1950s American values, for better or for worse. But now his support base are talking about Zionist power. They're talking about demographics. They're awake to race. They are skeptical of big pharma, big businesses, people that Trump would have, you know, at one point, you know, would have seen as sort of a, you know, pro-American. You know, if you're pro big business and you're pro big capitalism, you're American. That's the American dream, isn't it? Sort of the capitalist American dream. But Trump supporters now probably aren't so down with that. They're probably quite suspicious of that kind of thing. And, you know, that's obviously, you know, really, you know, it's a good thing that they're suspicious of that kind of thing. You know, it shows that they've grown politically. But sometimes you grow towards someone, and sometimes you grow away from someone. And I think in this case, we've seen these guys growing away from Trump and potentially growing toward the positions that people like Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson are now adopting. And look, Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson, they're intelligent people. They know what they're doing. They're wealthy people. They've done, you know, they've got sizable audiences, but they understand where their audience is going. And Candace Owens, you know, like her or loathe her, she is somebody who has read the room. She understands that her audience is becoming aware of what we would call the JQ, you know, skeptical of big pharma, skeptical of capitalist companies. And because of this, Trump might be looking at this now. People would be looking towards Trump. And I should imagine his voter base from 2016, if you now ask them about Israel, they wouldn't say Israel deserves America's, you know, unrequited love and support, etc. They would probably say, well, actually, Israel, you know, is in the wrong here. Israel is warmongering. Israel has been the aggressor. Now, Trump wouldn't understand that. And I think that's where he might be losing not all of his support. You know, I'm not saying he's on the rocks or anything, but he would lose some support over this. It would take the edge off his campaign. It would have people saying he's wrong on this one. Because his supporters don't want a war with Iran. His supporters are people that I would say consist of, because there's two anti-war groups, isn't there? There's the left-wing anti-war group and there's the right-wing anti-war group. And Trump is the right-wing anti-war group. And I think if Trump had come out and said, this wouldn't have got this far had I been president, because I would have calmed them.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
There's the left-wing anti-war group, and there's the right-wing anti-war group, and Trump is the right-wing anti-war group. And I think if Trump had come out and said, this wouldn't have got this far had I been president, because I would have calmed this, I think people would have liked that. But to come out and sort of posture that this wouldn't have got this far if I was president, because Iran would fear me and Israel would be stronger than ever, that's an example of him not reading the room in 2024.
Yeah, well, the thing about Trump is... I've always considered him not to be so much of a leader as an asset. In some ways, he's a leader. I mean, he did lead on immigration, but on so many. But even then, Don Black used to say he thought Trump was inspired by his followers. That he kind of stumbled upon immigration, and it really caught fire with his followers, and so he made it his thing. And I think Trump thinks that his base is pro-Israel. And like you say, I think he's misreading them. To an extent, he's misreading them. There is a big hunk of his base that is pretty much dyed-in-the-wool pro-Israel. Either they're boomers who just grew up on it and you get these like tens of millions of evangelicals who want Israel to bring on the Antichrist so that Jesus will come back, or however it goes. You do have that, but but I think there's movement. There's a shift going on, and Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson are maybe they're reflections of it more than even causes of it. But you know, they're kind of both part of the same. You know, I've attended a lot of Trump rallies, and what I think would be really good, and I don't think it's something a single person can do, but I think it would be great if you got a group of people, maybe NJP people or Groypers, but people going in enough of a group, but like at least a dozen, and cheer really loudly for Trump whenever, you know, the whole time he's saying things that aren't completely stupid. But then when he starts saying something about Israel, all of a sudden change the tone and say, you know, no, America first, not Israel first, or just chant something like that and make it clear. Because I've been to his rallies, and every now and then you'll have some lone, you know, liberal who'll just start freaking out about, you know, Trump's a fascist, or just going off and creating a bit of a commotion. And it kind of interrupts things. But if you had a group, and they were portraying themselves as being pro-Trump, but then they disagreed with him on something fundamental, I think it would attract a lot of attention. I think it would. So I'm just throwing that out there.
I think that'd be a great idea. And I think it might wake him up as well. I think if there's one thing that Trump likes to do, he likes to please the crowd, doesn't he? He likes to be there and be a bit of a crowd pleaser. Trump does not want to be the guy in the crowd that he doesn't want to be the guy at the event that nobody likes. You know, that goes against everything that Trump is. And, you know, he wants his own supporters to love, I'm not going to say obey, but he does. He kind of does want them to obey, doesn't he? He kind of wants them to look at him and be like, yeah, you know, you're our hero, Donald. We adore you. He wants that adoration from his fan base. That is a Donald Trump trait, that he wants adoration. He wants to be adored. He wants to be loved. And based on that, he probably is in a situation here where if he walked into a room of his own people and they were all screaming, and I mean screaming for his, against Israel, I think that would hit him. I think that would hit him. I don't think he'd like that. I don't think he'd be able to cope with that. I don't think he'd be able to deal with people not being on board with him in that way. And I think that might change his opinion. I really do, because he is egotistical. That is one thing about Trump, which is his downfall. He wants to be loved. And it was one of his downfalls, really, when he actually achieved the presidency the first time. Because unfortunately, when he was in the first time, he wanted to be loved so much that when his enemies booed him, he turned on his own friends to try and please them, which was obviously at the time completely disastrous. And that did not work for him. That did not work for him, you know, one bit. In fact, it kind of, you know, well, it annoyed a lot of people, didn't it? It annoyed a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I think this is such a big, important issue. And a lot of people who listen to RBN say, well, we can't, what's the use of voting? We can't vote our way out. Well, it doesn't matter if you can vote your way out. I mean, the electoral politics does change, you know, who wins elections, who winds up getting in these office, it does change the landscape. It changes our environment. It's not as if we can just go and vote and then everything's going to be okay. It's never going to be like that. But it does matter who's president. And honestly, this stuff going on in the Middle East, which could become a big regional war, it could become World War III, it could really end civilization. That's kind of a big deal. And as much as I despise the Biden people, if this election winds up becoming a referendum on supporting our bestest buddies, bestest friends forever in the world, the whole world, Israel, and Trump's taking that position, and Biden has to abide by the black and brown women in the squad that are making a fuss, and he has to backtrack on Israel and back off. Heck, I mean, I'd rather have Biden get reelected. That's sad but true. So we'll see how it goes. But you know, aside from the electoral politics, there's also the whole geopolitical thing where you've got the you've really got pretty much the entire world outside of North America, Europe, and you know, I guess like Japan, South Korea, and the Philippines that that are just really rallying around you know, opposition to Israel. And the and even some of the, you know, even in the United Nations votes, even the countries of East Asia, the countries of Europe, have not been voting for Israel in the United Nations, in the Security Council or the General Assembly. I mean, Israel never had a lot of support, really, in the international community, but it has never been more isolated. And also, to the extent it's got any backing at all, which is from the United States, the United States has never been more isolated. The United States is completely losing its position. You know, it is no longer the leader of the world. Its position in the world hasn't been weaker probably since before World War II, maybe even before World War I. I mean, the United States is really a fading power. It's an empire in decline. And you know, perhaps this is why, I mean, Netanyahu probably has a lot of things in his head. He's getting old. I guess he's about 74. And if he loses power, which could happen almost any moment, he might wind up spending the rest of his life in jail. But also, he may be smart enough to know that that even if it's a long shot, what he's trying to achieve is a long shot, the odds are just going to get worse and worse as days go by. So he may be just willing to if you're a Zionist Jew, you don't do Hail Marys. But we refer to a Hail Mary pass like at the end of a football game where you just throw the ball up and then you start praying that your guy will catch it. I don't know if you have that expression in Britain, but Netanyahu's just, it seems like he's just going for broke. That and it may be partly because he recognizes that even though things are bad now, the odds of any kind of success for what he's trying to achieve, as every day goes by, they get lower. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Netanyahu is in a strange position because the problem is there is increasing opposition against him in Israel, but his core support base do seem to be baying for blood and for more. And that puts him in a difficult position, because when you're losing grip on power, you tend to move towards your more fervent supporters. But those people are the ones that want you to cling to potentially more extreme solutions. So that puts you in a weird position. That puts you in a fundamentally odd place. And I think that's where Netanyahu is now. So Netanyahu would probably naturally at this point want some kind of climb down, because there are more people within Israel saying, well, this isn't turning out the way we want. This isn't helping our long-term chances of survival anymore. This is potentially going to leave us more isolated within the Middle East. Because, look, people say, like, Israel doesn't have any allies in the Middle East. But there are countries like Saudi Arabia that will deal with Israel. There are countries like Jordan who will deal with Israel. But as this continues on, there is the very real chance that these countries will view Israel in a dimmer light. It will, the few people who will deal with Israel will potentially at some point not wish to deal with Israel. Now, once you're in that position where you are absolutely, completely and totally isolated, where do you go? How do you come back from that? So, you know, he has to sort of eye that on one hand. He doesn't want, you know, he doesn't want everybody with a dagger out towards Israel, or does he? Lots of people in Israel don't want that, but maybe his supporters do. And him being Israel's prime minister does hinge on him effectively managing to bring together multiple groups of people and having support from what could be described within Israel as extremist elements that maybe do want an all-out war. And if he loses them, he loses his grip on power, and he can't afford to lose them. So he can't afford to lose his most fervent supporters at this point in time. So I don't think we're going to see a climb down from him. If anything, I think he might take a more extreme position, or might offer more extreme solutions to the section of his support base that want this, that want conflict, that want war, that want a situation to escalate, that want to try and drag America and Britain into this, and might even want a full-on sort of coalition ground invasion of somewhere like Iran. You know, 'cause there are people in Israel that want that, and those people at the moment, you know, do hold not significant power in the Knesset, but do hold sway in the Knesset because of the way it's constituted.
Yeah, well, they do. The one of the things about the Knesset, it's got, I believe it's 120 members, so you need 61 in order to have a majority. But because the Arab citizens of Israel, they do vote, and they constitute maybe 15% of the citizens of Israel. You know, the people in the occupied territories don't vote, but the people in outside of Jerusalem and the West Bank, they do vote. And it's a proportional representation system. So out of the 120 members of the Knesset, there's a dozen or more who belong to Arab parties. Those Arab parties are not ever welcome in the coalition. And so effectively, you know, they exist in parliament, but the only people who can really, the only groups that can form a coalition are the Jewish parties. And so you might only have, say, 107 Jewish members of parliament, and you've got to put together 61. Well, that's not just a simple majority. That's a supermajority. And it's extremely difficult to cobble together. And there, a lot of these parties are extremist religious parties. Some of them are extremist extreme national Zionism. And it is almost impossible to put together a coalition without very extremist parties. That's just the way it is, because what are you going to do, bring in Arabs? You can't bring in Arabs. That's not going to happen. So even if Netanyahu, even if he got replaced, who'd he be replaced with? The Israeli politics have become just so extreme that he'd probably be replaced with a complete lunatic. That's, you know, I'm not like I'm trying to make
a complete lunatic, implying that he isn't a complete lunatic, but I do see what you mean. I think that
he's shrewd. He's a shrewd operator. Is he a lunatic? I think he's at least got one foot in reality.
Well, this is what I mean about him wanting to hold on to power, though. I think he's obviously got, you know, every man has personal ambition as well as, you know, ideology, etc. And I should imagine that his personal ambition at this point is not to lose power, is to carry this on, fundamentally, as long as he needs to carry this on for. And he doesn't want to lose face. And he also doesn't want to lose the people who are still supporting him. Because if he does, but as you say, balance of power could, you know, force, you know, major, major changes where he would lose power or he would lose face. And, you know, obviously he doesn't, you know, obviously that is something he doesn't want, you know, he doesn't want to happen. And it's something that he's obviously a man that, as we all are, who has some self-interest at heart, and he wants to remain prime minister. He's done a lot to try and hold on to that power over the years. And I should imagine one of his main goals is to keep that power. Obviously, he has his ideological goals, but whether his ideological goals are actually as aligned with the more sort of religious fundamentalist parts of the Knesset is another thing, and it's probably debatable as to whether they are. you know, it's probably debatable as to whether that's an actual, whether that's actually his goal. Probably not. But is he going to have to satisfy those people? Yes. And are those the people that want some kind of all-out war? Well, again, the answer is fundamentally, yes, they do want that. And I think there are also, you know, Adam Green often talks about this, and I'm obviously quite a, people know that I'm quite a fan of Adam Green and his work.
Way down on the levee in old Alabama, there's Daddy and Mammy, there's Ephraim and Sammy. On a moonlight night you can find them all while they're waiting. The banjos are syncopating, what's that they're saying? Oh, what's that they're saying? The while they keep playing, I'm humming and swaying. It's the good ship Robert E. Lee has come to carry the cotton away. Watch him shoving along.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Health Simple with Colorado Shioji. Fact bit number one. What goes in must come out. Whatever we ingest, breathe in, or transfer by contact must be expelled. Expelled directly as burned calories, through perspiration, respiration, or expelled via urinary and gastric channels. Every element that is not properly used or removed by our bodies become toxins. And toxins, as we know, are causal to every disease and ailment. Toxins are what makes us subpar, unable to be at our best. Be your healthy best by cleansing your body of daily and deeply embedded toxins. Live stronger, and we hope live longer. Shilajit, legit Shilajit, that is, like Colorado Shilajit, is perhaps the greatest homeopathic whole body remover of toxins made by Mother Earth.
Look for the Gold Mountain and Medical Symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
Well, again, the answer is fundamentally, yes, they do want that. And I think there are also, you know, Adam Green often talks about this, and I'm obviously quite a, people know that I'm quite a fan of Adam Green and his work, but Adam Green often talks about this issue in Israel of religious extremists who talk about end time prophecies, who talk about things to do with the idea that, you know, they believe that they need to bring about certain conditions in order to bring about these end time prophecies. And, you know, if they bring those about and they achieve that, then they believe that they will fundamentally see this end time prophecy fulfilled. And that from a from our perspective.
And this is a factor. Yeah, this is a factor. Yeah. I mean, these people couldn't do it on their own, but they are certainly a very important factor in what's going on right now.
And look, here's another thing as well, Patrick. Right, these end time prophecy people. Okay, we would regard them in this country as sort of the West as mad. You know, like if these end times prophecy people were actually, we would see them as crazy, as loons. We would be like, well, these people are mad. You know, if somebody was walking down the street in an area where we lived, here in Britain, talking about the end times and prophesizing about, you know, what happens, you know, when the end times come, we would say, this guy's a loon. This guy's an absolute idiot. You know, don't listen to him. But things are very different in Israel. And that kind of prediction, that kind of sort of crazy, crazy talk is actually quite normal there, because it is a nation that has a far greater theological founding than other nations. So here in the UK, you know, over there in the US, there's this large divorce between sort of religion and the governance of the state. So, you know, here we call it the separation of church and state, and that's something that happened a long time ago. But in Israel, the state is largely intertwined with religion. It's largely intertwined with, you know, their religious beliefs. Now, that can create a series of serious problems, where you end up with people governing or legislating for matters of state based upon, you know, what can we say, sort of prophecies from thousands of years ago. You know, we have to fulfill the prophecy, and yeah, you know, the state should be working towards the fulfillment of those prophecies. But that in itself is a very bizarre thing by our estimation, but it's also a very dangerous thing when you think about it. And that's why in the West, church and state became separated. So you weren't passing law based on, you know, a 2000 year old prophecy, or the current head of the church's interpretation of a particular paragraph or a chapter or verse in the Bible. But it's different to that in Israel. You know, there is that sort of rabbinical force. And, you know, without being insulting, I would say that rabbinical law and the way rabbis behave is far more based on sort of superstition and interpretation than maybe a lot of other religion. It is a very superstitious religion, and that is not a good thing if you're basing that religion, if you're basing sort of the matters of state on that religion, is it? That's not where you really want to be.
But, okay, well, thank you. You know, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for joining me. And tell people how they can find your content.
You can find me on Odyssey, you can find me on Gab, you can find me on Telegram, and you can find me on Rumble and BitChute. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
As you can plainly see, at night when he's asleep, into his tent he'll creep.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.